General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushbelts of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
The eastern province of Tanzania covers an area of nearly 42,000 square miles, about three quarters of the size of England. 100 miles to the east lies Dar es Salaam on the Indian Ocean. The south of the province has been given over to the preservation of game. 10,000 square miles of remote, uninhabited territory known as the Selu Game Reserve. The northeastern sector is fed by the Rufiji River, which flows to the sea. And here, in the rich alluvial floodplain, game in their thousands congregate at the water's edges. On the border of the reserve live the Matumbi. The Matumbi have always been hunters, and in recent years they've turned their talents to poaching. In 1956, a particularly bad year, they managed to dispatch nearly 10,000 head of game by a variety of fiendish methods. That was the year I was transferred to the Selu as chief game warden, and I commenced duties just before Christmas. Those last few December days were the only days of peace I had, for with the new year, the Matumbi moved in force. I look back on it now as the year of the poacher. In 1957, the start position of the Selu Reserve was critical. There were only two European game wardens. Charlie Hammond, a quiet pipe smoker with a knowledge of bushcraft second to none in the province, and Mike Stewart, a tough six-footer with an inexhaustible capacity for getting things done. In support, we had 13 game guards, three four-wheel drive vehicles, and one heavy five-ton lorry. Two motor launches had just been allocated to us for patrol work on the rivers and waterways. And that was all. Each of our four-wheel drives did, however, carry a fixed two-way transmitter, and these were to prove invaluable in our fight against the Matumbi poacher. On my arrival, Charlie Hammond and Mike Stewart painted a grim and sobering picture of the poacher's art.
Well, look at it this way. All Africans are allowed to earn weapons to control vermin, to kill or counter animals that destroy their crops. Mm. And consequently, there are at least, 70,000 licensed muzzle holders in Tanganyika today, and probably more than 10,000 shotguns. Now, the number of illegal firearms must be at least, triple that amount.
Hmm. A horrifying thought. More coffee, Mike?
Yes, thanks. You know, Charlie's got a point there. If they stuck to vermin and used their guns in self-defense, it would be okay. They don't. In fact, not a fraction of 1% of their weapons is used for any such purpose. Any European who hunts buffalo, for instance, is bound by law to use a rifle with a caliber of no less than .375. A Matumbi poacher, on the other hand, can go out and plug a bull with a muzzle loader that has about as much power as a water pistol. Consequently, the slug only just pierces the skin. Take a trip to Mthondo in the northeast. Any day you like, you'll find plenty of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
One animal in every 10 has some kind of wound, is either superficially or seriously handicapped. After days or weeks of agony, the Matumbi will follow up his quarry. Your buffalo will be leisurely worn down and gradually shot to pieces.
Well, by your expression, I take it that's not the worst of it.
No, not by a long chalk. Let Charlie take over. About the poison, Charlie.
Well, they use two types here, Acacanthera and the seeds of Stephanthus. Both deadly, but the period of agony varies with the freshness of the mixture. At current rates, a poacher can buy two matchboxes full for about 10 bob. If he's careful, the supply will last him a year. Minimum investment for maximum profit. His quiver will hold about 20 arrows. Now, the average Mutumbi has enough skill to pump the lot into a herd at a waterhole before the poor devils know anything about it.
In the meantime, every wildebeest or giraffe tail that they sell as a fly switch brings them at least 2 bob each.
But the market price is about 15 shillings.
Well, that's right, and that's the crux of the matter. Look, it's not just the poachers, it's the organizers, the racketeers behind them, those Arab swabs down in Mombasa and Dar es Salaam who make a fortune through exploitation of others' ignorance.
We've estimated that over 500 Mutumbi have been organized into poaching gangs here in the Sulu. Ivory, rhino horn, leopard skins bring in the biggest profits. And these are the species we've got the least of. Poacher will only get about 2 bob a pound of ivory and 3 bob for rhino horn. But the big boy at the other end with his fleet of fishing boats and dhows laughs loud and long all the way to the bank.
Now you said it.
Yeah, he knows that his ivory will sell at 35 bob a pound on the far eastern market, and his rhino horn, a so-called aphrodisiac, will earn at least 4 quid.
QED, poaching has become almost a part of our national economy.
Then we'll hit them as they've never been hit before.
Yeah, how? Not so easy. We know there's an organization behind the Mutumbi, but we haven't been able to get a lead.
Well, let's take a look at the map here. See, 90% of the poachers infiltrate from the eastern boundary there.
Right, yeah.
Now, remember, it's only 100 miles from the nearest coastal ports of Mohore, Isuju, and Dar es Salaam.
Yeah.
Right. Now, where are the main concentrations of game? Along the Rufiji River and its northeastern tributaries. Conclusion, our target area is in the northeastern corner of the reserve.
I agree, but what's the plan of campaign?
Erase and eradicate every single poacher's camp in that area. Shoot at sight every poacher's dog. Capture every steel gin trap, wire snare, muzzle loader, and shotgun that you can lay your hands on. Hammer them as they've never been hammered before. Knock their organization for a loop.
So, where do we start?
See here, the northeast corner is shaped like a triangle there,
yeah, you see that.
Now, Mike, you work the eastern side with my Hindi and 3 boys, starting at the lagoon and moving up the Lukuliru. And I'll take the northern side there, you see, the Rufiji River, with the patrol boats. The 2 rivers meet at Mujiju, so I suggest that you, Charlie, you work up the center of the triangle there, and we'll rendezvous at the apex, okay?
Right. When do we move?
As soon as possible. Hammond and Stewart gazed at me for a second, and then got up and left, their eyes filled with doubt. Poor devils, they've been fighting the Sulu poachers for years. They knew the odds better than I did. But I had to start somewhere. Perhaps I could see the wood where they couldn't see the trees. Stewart moved out the following afternoon with 3 game scouts. Hammond left only hours after him, accompanied by 4 of our best trackers. It took me longer to get organized, and I set off for the water patrol boats only the morning after. That afternoon, I made my first contact with Mike Stewart.
Calling Patrol 1. Calling Patrol 1, are you receiving me? Calling Patrol 1, are you receiving me? Over.
Receiving you loud and clear. Over.
Anything to report, Mike?
Not much. We reached the lagoon at lunchtime. No sign of game and no sign of poachers. We are moving north to the Lukuliru tributary, which flows into the eastern boundary.
Well, that's near Mitchell's farm, isn't it? Repeat. That's near Mitchell's farm.
Yes, that's right. His fence borders the reserve for about 20 miles. The Lukuliru flows through his farm.
Has Mitchell ever reported poaching activities in that area?
Not that I can remember. But then he's a cripple. Dashed up his leg in a flying accident. He leaves most of his farm work to his Rufiji foreman, Keezy. Keezy wouldn't dare open his mouth about poachers. He'd find himself split from stomach to gizzard.
Delicately put. Well, keep in touch. Contact me the moment something breaks. Over.
Roger. I'll do that. Over and out.
Charlie Hammond came through moments later.
Calling Patrol 3. Calling Patrol 3.
Got you loud and clear, Charlie. What's the news?
We found tracks, all right. Kipuri picked them up 10 minutes ago.
How many?
Oh, a party of 6, I should say. From the spoor, Kipuri reckons they're pretty well loaded down.
Are you going to backtrack or keep after them?
Keep after them, I think. They're probably no more than 2 hours ahead of us. We'll catch them easily.
What's your position?
About 10 miles from Mujiju at the northeastern corner.
Mike's about 20 miles south and east of here, moving up the Lukuliru.
Any luck?
No luck as yet. Well, get cracking and report as soon as you can. Over and out.
The
launches pushed forward against the sluggish waters of the Rufiji until we reached the great bend known as Vulture's Corner.
Bwana! Over there! Near the fig trees! A wildebeest, Bwana!
Bring her in wide, Gehendi.
Dear Bwana, friend.
Right. Tie her up, Gehendi.
Dear Bwana.
I took my H&H.468 and leapt to the bank. It was a wildebeest, all right. A young bull, probably no more than 2 years old. It had slunk to its knees, its head resting, exhausted on the ground. Gripping its left hind leg, its teeth biting 2 inches into the flesh, was a steel gin trap. The wildebeest had struggled to release its leg. The whole of the tibia, down to the hoof, had been shorn of skin. Muscle and sinew had been stripped away. The bone lay naked and exposed for a length of 16 inches. The poor beast's eyes rolled in agony, and its lips foamed and bubbled. Even as it turned its head towards me, I fired. It rolled gently sideways, its left hind leg still firmly clamped in the jaws of the trap.
All right, kid. Release the trap and put it in the boat. You can leave the wildebeest. Hyenas and jackals will be here at nightfall. Get the boys organized. I want a fire going and the tents up by nightfall.
Dear Bwana, friend.
On second thoughts, leave the trap here. I think we'll be able to use it. Now, come on, get going. I didn't mean to be so harsh, but I was upset. I'd seen a steel gin trap in operation before, of course. But a gin trap is something you never get used to. And then the receiver crackled. Patrol 3 here. Patrol 3 receiving you.
That you, Chief? I've got news. Big news.
Carry on.
We found a depot on the banks of the Lucalero, about 2 miles from the main coastal road to Utete and Monhoro.
Well, how the devil did they...
The dump was darn well concealed. The whole of the area is thick with papyrus reed, 20 feet tall at places. We'd never found it except for the smell.
Smell? Well, go on, tell me about it.
Roger. Well, it happened like this. We had a blowout which forced us to stop.
Okay, Mahendi, up with the spare wheel and the jack. Quick about it.
Bwana.
Yes, Mahendi.
You smell something, Bwana.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Wow.
What a stench. I wonder I didn't notice it before.
Over there, Bwana. Oh, plenty meat, Bwana.
You mean poachers?
Indio, Bwana. Plenty chakula nyama.
Right. Tell the others to keep quiet. Wasanya! Kabula!
Yo, Bwana.
Move round the back. When you're 15 yards off, kick up a racket. You know the routine. Off you go.
And you, Bwana.
Yeah. Yeah, follow me. Behind this anthill here. Now to move quietly to the left. Papyrus explodes like 6 guns. Open patch coming up. Have to shift to the right. That's better. Trouble is now I can't see a darn thing.
Oh, Bado, Bado, Bwana. They are very near now, Bwana.
What the deuce is keeping Wasanya and Kabula?
Oh, they will begin soon, Bwana.
Okay, here we go. How many you got there, Mahendi?
Impuri, Bwana. This one, I think, will be sick for a long time.
That makes 7 in all. Not a bad haul.
This one, he is dead, Bwana.
Leave him to the vultures. He wish no better on these poor animals. Look at them, Mahendi. They were all alive last week. 200 civet skins. Over 1,000 pounds of ivory. At least 100 pounds of rhino horn. You like biltong, Mahindi? There's enough here to last you 6 months. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to be sick. There was over 5,000 pounds of meat being smoked, Chief, drying on pole racks that stretched for over 200 yards. You could have smelled it a mile away. Thanks to Mahindi, we did.
How many did you capture?
5 alive, 2 dead.
Well done. Have you grilled them?
For 2 solid hours. We won't get the truth from them.
What else did you find?
Plenty. Let me see. I made a list. Starting from the top, 20 times 44-gallon drums of petrol, 45 times same of diesel oil, 6 outboard motors ranging from 10 to 20 horsepower, a dozen spare heavy-duty truck tires, and enough mechanical spare parts and tools to service the Queen Elizabeth.
That's quite a haul. So they're using lorries as well?
Well, I reckon they're using only lorries to transport the stuff.
How do you mean?
Well, with the Rafiji and the Lucullero systems on our northern and eastern boundaries, we've been jumping to the conclusion that the poachers have been shipping the stuff out by river. That's just what the big boy wanted us to think. For years, we've been barking up the wrong tree. But when you come to think of it, the river journey's too far for them to ferry the goods out during one night. And daylight trips would be too dangerous. So what do? They set up poaching camps just inside the reserve border. And over 3 or 4 nights, they ship the stuff back to the depot in their canoes. And remember, those canoes are fitted with outboard motors for quick recovery. At the depot, the trucks are waiting to move out of the goods as they come in. Once the trucks are loaded and away, the poachers dump the outboards and paddle innocently back to wherever they came from. It was years, you know, we've been searching those canoes, and we've always found just enough meat and biltong and odd bits and pieces to convince us that the devils are, in fact, using the river as a getaway. Clever, eh?
So darn clever, it's devilish. Did you pick up the truck tracks?
Well, that's the puzzling part of it. There are plenty of tracks leading north, south, west, back to the reserve. But they all backtrack on each other.
Any leading into the river?
No. We've tried to find suitable fords, but the water's too deep and the bed's too muddy. Even with 20 forward gears, you'd never get across. Anyway, the trucks would have to cross Mitchell's farm. We'd certainly have had a report from him if they had.
Did you check his side of the river?
Every inch for 2 miles. Not a sign of tire spur.
Oh, one more thing. Where does the main road to Tete run?
Well, you've got to cross Mitchell's farm. It's just on the other side. But I tell you, Chief, no truck crossed that river.
I put the receiver down on its cradle with a distinctly uncomfortable feeling. Whoever was behind this racket knew what he was doing. The big boy had made a large investment and he was playing for big stakes. By now, Mike would be on his way back to headquarters with the captured loot. I decided to raise Hammond. 5 minutes later, he was on the line. What gives, Charlie?
Well, we're in trouble, sir.
What's the matter?
Well, these poachers we were tracking. We must have been gaining fast, and then, well, suddenly the tracks disappeared. We've searched the whole vicinity. Not a sign, not a flipping twig broken. Kipuli reckons that some of them must have dispersed earlier back. If they did, he missed the turnoff.
Look, he's paid as a tracker.
Oh, it's not his fault, sir. We're all over-enthusiastic, I guess. I wanted to catch him before dusk. Well, the fact is, the tracks we followed have simply vanished.
Well, don't keep saying they've vanished. I'm not your fairy godmother. Go back and check.
Yes, sir. Over and out.
I began to feel like a field commander who has outflanked his enemy only to find that they were not there in the first place. Then the voice of Kehinde interrupted my thoughts.
There is someone coming down the river, Bwana. One boat, one man.
How far?
About half 1 mile, Bwana.
Right, douse the fire. Tell every one of the boys to keep quiet or I'll personally cut their throats. Get the launches into the reeds. In 2 minutes, we were ready. The splashes of the approaching paddle could be heard coming round Vulture's Bend. Silently, the canoe turned towards the bank, the oarsmen letting the boat drift in with the current. A moment's pause, and there was a soft crunch on the bank. And then silence. A figure loomed up in the darkness and then stopped. It smelled us or heard us, for with an ejaculation, he sprang back towards the canoe.
Lights, Gindy, lights.
A second later, the pressure lamp roared into life. In the bluish glare, a figure stood hunched in agony, his left leg firmly held in the vicious clasp of the steel gin clamp. What is your name? Come on, come on. What's your name?
Mahegi.
Where'd you come from?
Kwangawazi.
Is that your trap? If you want us to release that gadget, you'd better talk fast. Is that your trap?
Ndiyobwana.
I knew that if I'd sprung the trap, I'd never get another word out of him. He proved to be a notorious poacher who'd been on the run for many years. He admitted to having killed a staggering total of animals. Over 100 elephants, 70 rhino, 20 lions, and 16 leopard. He'd forgotten how many buffalo he'd brought down. He'd been marauding game for 20 years undetected. He knew no pity, but he asked for it now.
Please, Bwana. Please.
One more question. Who do you poach for? Come on, come on. Who pays you your money? Okay, chum. You've asked for it. Kihindi, I'm going to bed.
Bwana.
Well?
I do not know his name, Bwana, but he is the man with the wings.
Next morning, we returned to headquarters. Mike Stewart was already on his way to Morogoro with his poachers. They'd probably be back again in a fortnight. But now they could be controlled. Charlie Hammond was also back and excited.
We didn't find the poacher, sir, but we found this.
Oh, thanks, Charlie. I might be needing this. Now I've got an important phone call to make.
Superintendent Maxwell speaking. Oh, hello, Frank. Yes, I'd heard about your drive.
What?
Now that is news. Yes, I know the shed. That long, low concrete block that fronts the river. Well, we live and learn. I always thought it was a cotton ginnery. I hope you're right. We'll be in a devil of a stew if it isn't there. A sliding roof, you say? Yes, we'll check that. We'll be over, say, by 12. Can't make it before then. 12. Fine. Good luck. Sergeant, I want 6 men, and I want them quickly.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mitchell. My name is Frank Lauderdale. Do you mind if I come in?
Not at all, Mr. Lauderdale. It's a pleasure to meet you at last. Rather untidy, I'm afraid, but then...
I understand. It's not easy to look after yourself on crutches.
Well, that at least is Frank. Oh, excuse the pun.
Not half as frank as I'm going to be. Is this yours?
I hardly know. Looks like an ordinary spark plug to me.
Not so ordinary, Mr. Mitchell. But anyway, you should know. You were a pilot.
So what, Mr. Lauderdale?
You left it behind at Mujiju when you rescued your poachers in your helicopter.
What a fantastic idea.
For years you've been carrying on a profitable trade in poaching. Ivory, rhino horn, leopard skins, anything you can get your dirty hands on. You've left a trail of agony and destruction second to none in this country. And it was all so easy. You merely had to hop across the river in the helicopter, nip back with the goods, stow them in the cotton shed, and then move them out with your cotton trucks. The main road lies just outside your front door. 3 hours drive and the goods are delivered at the coast.
And how exactly does a helicopter go undetected? A rather unusual object would cause comment, I should imagine.
You know darned well how easy it was. To get across the river, you needed elevation of only a few yards, and it's less than 100 yards across. You moved at night, probably simpler. But in case the depot was ever discovered, you planted tires, petrol and oil. In fact, you stood on your head to give the impression that the loot was being dispatched by truck. The only trouble was the tracks led nowhere. That was a mistake. And the second mistake came yesterday, when you were forced to rescue a gang of poachers at Mujiju. You changed spark plugs, but you dropped one. The third mistake was the poachers. You thought they would never talk. They knew if they did that they'd come to a sticky end. And besides, the money was good. And the court sentences are no deterrent. But one of your boys did. when he was caught in a steel trap.
But that's not the end.
Maxwell, get him!
Get out of my way! Will you take
it? Wait a minute, wait a Mitchell!
Mr. Mitchell.
Yes.
You're under arrest. Anything you say from now on will be taken down and may be used in evidence against you.
Join us again next week for another story of the African Bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.